This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
By the Book on BFM 89.9.
Hello and welcome to By the Book. This is Sharmila Ganesan. And together with me, as always, my happy bunny of the week, Lee Chui Lin.
Hello.
I don't know whether that's entirely accurate, because in discussing the idea of happiness for this show, we realized that we don't always quite know how to slice what that means when it comes to reading. And the reason that we decided to do that was because in conjunction with the International Day of Happiness, which is on the 20th of March, we initially started off with this grand idea of talking about books that embrace happiness.
Yeah, we were super enthusiastic, mm-hmm. very positive. You know, here we were thinking like, yeah, we're going to get this done.
There are
done.
All of these books that we know are out there that are all about happiness. And turns out, not quite.
Not so much. And I think that that's really because... what is that Anna Karenina line? You know, all happy families are the same and
yeah.
all unhappy families are different in their own way. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I butchered that, by the way.
But the spirit was there.
Thank you. Mm. And that's true of most stories. I think happiness is, it's something that we strive for in our daily life. It doesn't always make for the best stories. You know, it's not really where the richest content comes from.
Even the stories that somehow in my mind I remembered as being happy. For instance, I thought, oh, Howl's Moving Castle, that's a happy story.
Mm-mm.
And I'm like, no, but it's about kidnapping. It's about people losing loved ones. It's about... most stories that even if they left you feeling happy in the course of the story are not necessarily happy at all. And so it proved to be a bigger challenge than we expected. And so we've since tweaked our original idea. We will talk about some books that we think more than others embrace maybe joy or happiness or some element of levity maybe, while not entirely being happy clappy all the way.
Yes. And I think we also need to talk about, to start us off, right, this idea of happiness in books. Because if you were to do a quick Google, what will come up are self-help books, by
yes,
and large. You
yes.
know, things that promise to tell you how to be happy, things that talk about the memoirist's path towards happiness. You know, it tends to go along those lines. And the truth is that if I, especially if I have no attachment to the person who wrote the book, I really, 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 like, I don't know what it is about me. Every part of my brain and body just rejects those books. Like, I can't look at them and take them, not take them seriously. I do take them seriously. I just don't want to read them. There's something about that eternal shining optimism and positivity that I'm like, I don't know if this is the company that I want to be, you know, spending time with.
We've talked a lot about our relative sort of lack of engagement with nonfiction. I would say that when it comes to particularly self-help as a subset of that category, I wouldn't even say that I don't engage. I'm actively averse to reading self-help. And it's not because I don't think they can be useful to people, but you're right. Most of the time, there's this sense of, is this really a person from whom I want help? Like, are they my path to happiness? Do they know what happiness means to me? And most of the time, I find that I often am very skeptical about that whole concept. And on that note, actually, if you're someone who likes reading self-help and find that it makes you happy or it's a happy read for you, do let us know, because we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, and I'd like to know what works for you. Like, what have been examples of books that really did help, you know, that really kind of moved you in some way? Because I'm willing to be open to it. I just think I'm waiting for the right book. Generally speaking, when I read a book, I don't want to be bossed around. I just want to read a good story or to learn something. So that's where I'm coming from.
So yeah, you can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or write to us at buythebook@bfm.my. And carrying on from there, maybe we will get into the specific titles that we did manage to come up with. Books that we thought in some way or another embodied happiness.
Yes.
Lynn, do you want to start us off?
Oh, man. Okay. So as I've said, I really struggled with this one. I went back to my childhood, looked around at stories. And as I think we've established, a lot of things that you would have thought of as happy in your childhood, things like even Enid Blyton.
Yes.
Or Roald Dahl. Roald Dahl, if you read The Witches again, if you read Matilda, there are a lot of dark themes in there. Those books might have made me happy. I don't know if I can safely say that they are about happiness. But I wanted to talk about Calvin and Hobbes.
Oh.
Yeah, because we haven't actually talked. We never really address reading material like Calvin and Hobbes that was serialized, you know, that ran in newspapers, but were also collected into anthologies. And when I think about what was important to me as a child, I find it hard to move away from Bill Watterson's Calvin and Hobbes and the way that it informed some of what I thought about the world. I mean, it's the story of a boy and his imaginary friend, maybe?
How dare you?
Yeah.
Hobbes is very real. Thank
Even
you very
as
much.
I was saying it, I was like, oh, it hurts. So it's the story of a boy and his tiger and the adventures that they go on. And the fact that they do often have conversations about what is real and what isn't, about why sometimes you don't feel as happy as you should, why sometimes it might feel like your parents don't understand you. And I think that this speaks to where I'm at as an adult in terms of how I understand happiness. I don't want to be ecstatic all the time. I don't strive for that anymore. And Calvin and Hobbes has moments of ecstasy, you know, Calvin Ball, adventures in outer space.
The treehouse.
The treehouse. They have all these moments, but they also have just moments of cuddling up with your tiger and being happy in the snow. They also have moments of conflict resolution. And that's what I think of as happiness, I think, in my ripe old age of my 30s.
Well, I love Calvin and Hobbes. I wouldn't have thought of it, I must admit, because I think I don't think of it as a book. My exposure to Calvin and Hobbes was from the newspapers. And so for me, they were like a daily dose of happiness. Yeah. And that's something that I do miss. I mean, we have these great like online illustrators who maybe do similar things now, like on Instagram, you get like daily cartoons, which is really nice. Happy Boy, shout out, Malaysian artist who does something very similar. But yes, I can absolutely see why you picked that, because in some ways, happiness in a story or in a book doesn't have to be in your face.
Yeah.
It can be about a sort of underlying impression. And that leads me to my selection. And this immediately was the first and maybe the only thing that solidly came to mind was P.G. Wodehouse's Jeeves series.
Oh, brilliant.
Because to me, the word that came was idyll. As in I-D-Y-L-L. For me, the whole series is that. And it has that same underlying mixture of humor and pathos that Calvin and Hobbes also has. It has the interaction between two characters. And the reason I think that these books, to me, feel like they embrace happiness is because it's not about happiness, capital H, or happiness on a high. It's about the daily little pleasures and the daily joys, or even maybe not always the joys, but even when they're not happy, ultimately things turn out all right.
A perfect cucumber sandwich.
Yes.
Is so crucial to happiness. A perfect cup of tea.
A crisply ironed tie.
Yeah.
A perfectly matched hat. I mean, and the interactions with the language, the Wodehouse's language, he's such a master of wit. And that also, to me, I feel like it's a happy person writing about things that make him happy. And somehow for me, that is what makes that series, maybe a series that, if I were to put my finger on it, does embrace the idea of happiness.
I marmaladed a slice of toast with something of a flourish, and I don't suppose I've ever come much closer to saying tra-la-la as I did the lathering, for I was feeling in mid-season form this morning. God, as I once heard Jeeves put it, was in his heaven and all right with the world. He added, I remember, some guff about larks and snails, but that is a side issue and need not detain us. It is no secret, in the circles in which he moves, that Bertram Wooster, though as glamorous as one could wish when night has fallen and the revels get underway, is seldom a ball of fire at the breakfast table. Confronted with the eggs and bee, he tends to pick cautiously at them, as if afraid they may leap from the plate and snap at him. Listless about sums it up, not much bounce to the ounce. But today, vastly different conditions had prevailed.
Yeah, and so when I think back to the show that we did for International Women's Day, one of the authors that I think you brought up very briefly was Sylvia Plath. Mm-hmm. And Sylvia Plath is somebody who, I mean, even aside from her untimely end, her writing was very beautiful, but very grey. It always felt like a person who was working through a lot of stuff, working that through in her writing. And so you're right. I think P.G. Wodehouse is almost the complete opposite of that. It's just somebody who is like, listen, let me tell you what makes me happy, and hopefully it makes you happy too. It has that quality.
So we do need to take a quick break, but this conversation has turned out to be happier than I thought it would be. We are celebrating the International Day of Happiness, which is on the 20th of March in our own way, by talking about books that both maybe embody the idea of happiness, but also made us happy. So let us know what are the reads that make you happy or you turn to when you find that you might need a little jolt of joy in your life. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can watch WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back. This is By the Book, and I'm Sharmila, together with Lynn, as always. And this week, we are celebrating the International Day of Happiness, which falls every year on the 20th of March. We're trying not to be cynical about it.
Yeah, which, you know, we came into this with the best of intentions. Mm-hmm. I don't think either of us intended to be cynical. And then we thought about what we read and what we like. And then we realized that this whole finding happy books thing was going to be a little harder than we thought it was when we initially set out to do it.
And I think it might be something to do with just the nature of stories, right? We like stories that present challenges or darkness that needs to be surmounted. Without that, most stories feel just like, what's the point, you know? Going out and eating a sandwich is not a story. Mm. However, we did manage to narrow down a couple of books, and I think we've got a few more to follow on from the ones that we spoke about before the break. I'm glad you mentioned, so you described Sylvia Plath's work as grey, and that immediately reminded me of the other book that I thought of, that I always think of when I think of happiness, which is the Robin Hood Tales.
Chapter 1, How Robin Hood Came to Be an Outlaw. In Merry England in the time of old, when good King Henry II ruled the land, there lived within the green glades of Sherwood Forest near Nottingham Town a famous outlaw whose name was Robin Hood. No archer ever lived that could speed a grey goose shaft with such skill and cunning as his, nor were there ever such yeomen as the 70 merry men that roamed with him through the greenwood shades. Right merrily they dwelled within the depths of Sherwood Forest, suffering neither care nor want, but passing the time in merry games of archery or bouts of cudgel play, living upon the king's venison, washed down with draughts of ale of October brewing. Not only Robin himself, but all the band were outlaws, and dwelled apart from other men. Yet they were beloved by the country people round about, for no one ever came to jolly Robin for help in time of need and went away again with an empty fist.
I love those. I mean, Friar Tuck was inspirational to me. I don't know why.
I love Friar Tuck. I love Little John.
Yeah.
But the colour, for me, somehow, those books are green. And I know, you know, they wear green, obviously, but
they hide in the woods.
They hide in the woods, and it's Sherwood Forest. Like, and there's something just calming and joyful about feeling like you've dived headfirst into green that just embodies happiness and adventure. And and they are literally the merry men, you know? So I feel that those are a series of stories, which again, there's this idea of come what may, tonight we'll drink ale and be joyful, you know? And there's something very innocent and what's the word? Lasting about it, even against a background of feudalism and people losing their homes and needing to steal to survive.
It's the camaraderie, I think, you know, the fact that they're always together. And also, I love a book that describes plain food very well and makes it sound delicious.
Oh, I know.
It's a common thing, you know.
I wanted to drink ale before I knew what it was.
Precisely. Yeah. You know, and whenever they talk about like, I don't know, a simple slice of bread and cheese, and you're like, yes, you're right. If I had been out marauding all day, that's what I'd want to eat. And so I think there is that. It takes the simple pleasures of life very seriously. And they're inherently very fun and funny. I think Robin Hood is a witty character, and there are morals that live within those stories that do so without moralizing.
Yes.
And I think that also helps to strike that balance.
Mm-hmm. And you have some other books in mind as well.
I do. I know. Okay. So I just wanted to, before, just in line with Calvin and Hobbes, I'm not going to talk about it much, but as I said it, I was reminded of my other great love, which was Peanuts by Charles M. Schulz.
You're just bringing all the nostalgia today.
Yeah, because Peanuts is similar to Calvin and Hobbes in that it asks sort of tangled philosophical questions. It has all these complex social relationships that exist within the storylines, and that's what makes it so good. And it also has an underlying sadness that makes the happiness that much greater. So yeah, I just, as I was talking about Calvin and Hobbes, I was like, I can't believe I'm not going to talk about Peanuts. But what I really was thinking about is not so much a book as an author. I love Mark Twain. Mm-hmm. I think Mark Twain is a tremendously happy writer.
Yes.
He's very funny. He is probably one of the finest humorists who ever wrote. You know, if you've had a chance to read his articles and short stories, they are splendid. They're always so witty. They move along. They kind of just pull you through this world. And I actually read his major books in reverse. I read Huckleberry Finn first, and then I read Tom Sawyer.
Interesting.
It's just what I sort of had. And so I was introduced to, I guess, the darker side of things first, because, of course, Huckleberry Finn has a runaway slave in it. Whereas Tom Sawyer is sort of a, you know, it has some hardship, but Tom is just out there.
He's that classic boy having his adventures and being a bit of a, not following the rules.
Being a bit of a rascal, really.
Yeah.
And so when I think of happier days and simpler times and reading books with really good writing that always make me laugh, I tend to think of Mark Twain. He is perfect summer reading. I think he weirdly encapsulates summer for me. I love Mark Twain.
That's a great description, because you mentioned Mark Twain and I think of sunlit, like, fields.
Floating down a river.
Yes, floating in a river. And again, like Wodehouse, he has that quality. And maybe it's because they're both writers who write with humour. Mm. There is an inherent warmth to the way they write that really draws you in. And in a way, that's almost why I would call it a happy book, even when not everything that happens, even in Huckleberry Finn, is entirely happy.
2 or 3 days and nights went by. I reckon I might say they swum by. They slid along so quiet and smooth and lovely. Here's the way we put in the time. It was a monstrous big river down there, sometimes a mile and a half wide. We run nights and laid up and hid daytimes. Soon as night was most gone, we stopped navigating and tied up, nearly always in the dead water under a towhead, and then cut young cottonwoods and willows and hid the raft with them. Then we set out the lines. Next we slid into the river and had a swim so as to freshen up and cool off. Then we sat down on the sandy bottom where the water was about knee-deep and watched the daylight come. Not a sound anywheres. Perfectly still. Just like the whole world was asleep.
And if you are a fan of Mark Twain, we do actually have a show that we did before this.
One of our favorites.
Where we interviewed Alan Gribben, who is the co-founder of the Mark Twain Circle of America and author of Mark Twain's Literary Resources. He essentially tracked down and read Mark Twain's entire library, not his body of work.
But the books he read.
Correct.
Yeah.
So it's a whole thing. And you can find that by looking up Alan Gribben or Mark Twain on our site and our app.
Mm-hmm. So on that note then, we don't have a lot of time left for this segment, but I thought it would also be nice just to talk about books that just made us happy to read them. It doesn't have to necessarily be stories that were happy, but books that put a smile on your face and made you feel a little bit better about the world. And I'd like to put forth as a suggestion. It's a young adult book, if I'm not mistaken, and it's called A Tangle of Knots by Lisa Graff, G-R-A-F-F, Graff or Graff, I'm not sure. I read this book just coincidentally a few years ago, and just the story alone, guys, it's set in a world where everyone has what they call a talent, a capital T. Now, this can be a talent for anything, from a talent to being good at maths, but it does mean that you're kind of supernaturally good at it in some way. Katie, the main character in the book, her talent is being able to bake the perfect cake for any person, meaning she meets you, something tells her what the perfect cake for you is, and she makes it, and she makes you happy by giving it to you.
Lemon cake in my case, by the way, in case anyone was wondering.
Katie might surprise you because it's got to do with your inner soul.
Oh, so even if my taste buds want lemon cake, it may not be what my soul demands.
You may not yet have realized what your perfect cake is.
This is the best book.
It is. And wait, I'm not even done. It's interspersed with the actual recipes she comes up with for the people she meets.
Oh,
there's a lot more that happens. You know, there are things. There's a guy who steals people's talents. So it does become a little dark at some points. She's an orphan. So, you know, your classic sort of fantasy orphan finding her way in the world trope. But the book made me so happy. It's about cake and magic and you get recipes. Yeah, highly recommended.
Oh, that's such a nice one. Mine is, so I've already talked about mine. I think essentially all the books that I've spoken about are books that make me happy in my own little tentative way. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to add on to that list and say that just like with Mark Twain, an author that I have enjoyed, although I will say specifically a trilogy, is Roddy Doyle, who is a Irish author, I think writing specifically Irish author from Dublin, in fact. And the books that I'm thinking of comprise the Barrytown trilogy, which are The Commitments, The Snapper and The Van. And they tell the story of this one family through different perspectives.
At the dark end of the street, that is where
it's different characters at each point, although they all belong within this family. So in different books, you might see someone who later on is going to be a main character kind of pop in and out the door and things like that. And if you know Roddy Doyle, he writes in a very, very colloquial style. It is mostly dialogue, very little exposition. You don't really know what anybody looks like, but you get a real sense of how they sound and you get a real sense of how they live. And it's just, he's very funny. I think just as with Mark Twain, he's a very funny writer, but there's also quite a lot of pathos in there. Mm-hmm. And that's the stuff that makes me really happy reading it. In The Van, where this guy basically starts the patriarch of the family starts a fish and chips van during Ireland's big run in, I think, the 1990 World Cup or something. There are moments where I feel like I'm crying and I don't know whether it's because I'm sad or I'm happy. And it's just an emotional roller coaster and so well written, so funny. I really enjoy Roddy Doyle.
Well, I've never read Roddy Doyle and now I feel like I really want to.
Those three books, I think, are quintessentially Doyle and they're nice together and they're nice separately.
Well, those are a list of recommendations from us on books that we think kind of would make you happy. And that's to celebrate International Day of Happiness, which is on the 20th of March. However, we would love to hear from you. Tell us about the books that you turn to for a little bit of happiness. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Or you can write us at buythebook@bfm.my. Brings us to footnotes, and we thought that we would sort of catch up on some of the literary news that's been happening, well, in the world, I suppose. And just a couple of weeks ago, this year's long list for the Women's Prize for Fiction came out, and it was such a sort of impressively packed list that we thought we had to talk about it.
Yes, I think it's been described as a list of heavy hitters, mm-hmm. and it certainly feels that way. I mean, there are some major names that are placed on there. And they're names that I think have come up before, even when we were talking about the Booker, when we're talking about books we're looking forward to. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I mean, just in terms of the Booker alone, there are three former Booker winners that are on this list. So there's, well, naturally the big one, Hilary Mantel. I know you're very excited about this, Lynn.
Yes, I'm literally dancing in studio. I can't be seen, but I'm doing it.
For her book that hasn't even actually been published, well, wide sort of available in the market yet, The Mirror and the Light. The last in the Thomas Cromwell trilogy, right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, yeah. So that's on the list. And then there is Girl, Woman, Other by Bernardine Evaristo, which was last year's Booker winner, which she shared the award with Margaret Atwood.
Who isn't in this list?
Who isn't, yes. And finally, the other Booker winner that's on this list is Anne Enright, who is an Irish author, and she won the Booker for The Gathering back in 2007. So that's been a while, and so it's kind of interesting to see her back on the list as well. But it's really quite it's quite a big list, and a lot of really well-known names other than these as well.
I was interested to see that Taffy Bredessa Akner actually made it in for her first novel, Fleischman is in Trouble. Mm-hmm. It's a book that I've been meaning to pick up. I know Taffy Bredessa Akner more from her essays as well as her, this is going to sound flippant, but I don't mean it that way, her celebrity profiles. You know, because for a significant period of time, she was really kind of churning out these very insightful, very news-generating celebrity profiles. I'm thinking here particularly of the one in which Tom Hiddleston spoke to her post Taylor Swift.
Yes.
Again, I don't mean to sound flippant, but if you have not read it, I think you should, because she's a really smart writer. Mm-hmm. She's a very good writer. And I think if you read her profiles, then you see the level of psychological insight that she can achieve within that sort of format. And that's what made me excited for her novel, because when I read that, I'm like, ooh, what happens when you actually make up characters?
Yeah, because this is her first piece of fiction that we're seeing, right? Mm. I'm quite excited about Anne Patchett. I haven't read this book that she's been nominated for, which is The Dutch House, but I have read Commonwealth and I've read State of Wonder. And I just really like the way she's able to break down these... she's very good at bringing these huge political sort of concepts and events down into what feels like a very relatable and almost like it could be happening next to you way. And I'm curious to know what this book is. I haven't read it, so I'm not sure. But I think it's kind of a great example of how something that we spoke about in the last the show that we did 2 weeks ago, when we spoke for International Women's Day, and we talked about what exactly it means to be a female writer. I feel like looking at this list and how diverse it is and how each of them are so different, there's a really good representation across the spectrum as well. There's Jingjing Li, who wrote How We Disappeared. There's Dominicana by Angie Cruz. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering, are we still at a point where we need separate women's prizes? And I'm not necessarily trying to be controversial, but it is a question that gets thrown at you, right? When you are talking about, well, if you want to be equal, then why do you want a prize just for women?
Yeah, I know. So there's a part of me that says that having a separate prize gives a wider array of people a bigger shot at getting that prize. Mm. Because, of course, the Booker comes with so much pressure, as we saw when they selected two winners. They couldn't even decide on one. So the Booker has its own set.
So the Booker had actually a lot of women nominated last year as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I see where you're coming from. But then what would that mean? Would that mean that this prize money gets absorbed into that prize money? You know,
or they would open it up and it would become just a prize for fiction and anyone can compete.
Yes, exactly. So I think that... do we need a separate category for women? I think that in our show, and even in our conversations off air, I don't think we've ever truly established whether female authors do have or even need to have a distinct gender voice or tone, which I don't think they do. I think that if that's the case, then we're starting to say that men should only write men, women should only write women. And that's certainly something that I don't think here on By the Book we would ever advocate for. But yeah, there's a part of me that likes having the separate prize in order to give lesser known authors a shot. Maybe less relevant in a year where everybody is already somewhat established.
Mm. So the thing is, the Women's Prize for Fiction, which was previously known as the Orange Prize for Fiction, it was initially awarded as a counterpoint. It got started as a counterpoint to the Booker, mostly because the Booker was viewed as being, I believe it was back in 1991 when none of the six shortlisted books were by a woman.
Sure.
And so actually it was called the Bailey's Prize at that time, and then it became the Orange Prize. I kind of feel like that problem no longer exists in some ways. I'm a bit hesitant to say it because I'm not saying we are yet at a point where the publishing industry is equal by any means. However, given what we've seen with the Booker Prize even in the last couple of years,
yes.
Is that still a problem that needs to be bridged? I'm not sure. In some ways, I feel like underrepresented voices as a whole need more highlighting than women as this category.
So that's where I was coming from as well. I was starting to, you know, as you were speaking, I'm like, yeah, that's true. I mean, if you think about what we want right now in terms of diversity, I'm not sure that the answer would be, oh, we need to make sure that there are more female bestsellers, or we need to make sure that there are more female writers, you know, getting their names out there. if anything, the people who are continuing to perhaps not get that shine would be, like you said, from other underrepresented communities, whether it's from perhaps lesser known countries, you know, perhaps it's from migrant voices. I think there are a lot of different aspects, but then how you account for that in an award is difficult because awards naturally flatten everything out. We see this not just in the Bookers, but in all major prizes given within industries. I mean, if you think about the Academy Awards, it flattens out. Yeah. You know, Parasite was only so exciting because it was an anomaly. Normally, the most interesting, spiky, weird option is not the winner. So I don't know how to account for the multiple voices and perspectives. What kind of prize would actually work for that?
And as you were speaking, I was thinking, because initially I thought, oh, something like the Man International Booker, that does it. Like that does the translating. It also awards both the translator and the original author. However, then I got to thinking, but how many industries in how many countries have the means to even get translation work done, to have capable translators of, you know, the languages? How many communities have the access to publish in their language to tell their stories? And then it slowly becomes just incredibly complicated. And yes, and the moment you take it on an international stage, you're right, it is going to get flattened. The moment something gets translated into English, you're judging it by a particular standard of an English reader's perspective of what literature should be.
So maybe that money would be better served going elsewhere.
You know, do away with awards.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's an argument that could be had, is all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, that said, we're not knocking this list. It is actually very exciting. And I think maybe also potential for books that we could discuss on the show at some point.
Yeah. So I'm not going to say again how excited I am about Hilary Mantel. Mm-hmm. But looking at the list, one thing that stands out is Maggie O'Farrell and Hamnet, which talks about life in Shakespeare's family and the death of his son. And I think that tragedy, if you've sort of looked at Shakespeare's life and seen how or observed, I guess, the change in tone after that tragedy strikes his family, it's always been one of the central, I wouldn't say mysteries, but it's a central point of interest, I think, in Shakespeare's life. And I'm excited to see how that story gets told. I didn't know that that existed until I was looking at this list. And now I'm like, ooh, I can't stop thinking about it.
Well, let us know if you're excited about the 2020 Women's Prize long list, if you intend to read any of them, or tell us if you think awards that are based on particular categories are useful at all. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.